Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. This week, our guest is Roger Whitney. He is the Retirement Answer Man. He runs a podcast of that same name called The Retirement Answer Man, and you can find him at rogerwhitney.com. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Great to be here, Miranda.
So when we think about investing for retirement, so often we put together these portfolios that get us to retirement. So we work on building our asset allocation and we're building our portfolios, and then we get to retirement and then we have no idea what to do with the money that we've amassed. So what should people think about as they get ready to retire and they start thinking about how to invest during retirement?
Wow, that's a huge question.
I know, right? So, break it down for us.
Break it down. I think we're still going through that change of mindset of what our, I guess for you and I, our grandparents did, which is to buy things that paid lots of interest or dividends and to create income from the portfolio. You know, that's the traditional way people thought about retirement. Or investing during retirement is to generate this cash flow to supplement Social Security and things like that. I think that dynamic's really changed, but unfortunately, I don't think the investment mindset of what you do in retirement has changed much from that, even though in reality, that may not be the best way to go.
Yeah, so what do you mean by this kind of traditional retirement investing mindset? You talk about these investments that pay income. So what would you say to do differently? What do you think has changed? What is different now?
Well, what I think has changed is that strategy works if you're living what was a normal lifespan. You know, I'll use my grandfather as an example. He worked really hard. When he retired, he lived, his body was worn out, and he lived maybe 6 or 7 years after his retirement. And then he passed. Well, that's a pretty easy retirement to plan for. That's something where you can buy things that throw off income because he wasn't having to live very, you know, extravagantly in retirement because his body was worn out from work. If you take today's typical retiree, they are in their, say, mid-60s. They're fairly healthy, and they have a life expectancy of, you know, 15, 20 years in some cases. And not just that, so you have a longer time span, but not just that, you also have somebody that's a lot more active in retirement. You know, you take a traditional stereotypical retiree of years past, and they sat around and read books and went to the blue light special for breakfast. Well, today's retiree operates a lot differently. So clipping coupons on bonds or getting dividends only, which is what I hear a lot when people talk about how to invest during retirement, really isn't going to provide for that type of lifestyle of the modern retiree.
Okay, so then what do you suggest? What sorts of strategies can the modern retiree employ in order to make sure that he or she has this money to last this 15, 20, or even 30 years? I mean, we're talking some retirees are expecting to live 30 years or even 35 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's a scary proposition. And that's the million plus dollar question is, okay, how do you do that? And all I can do is explain how I do it. So I'm a practicing planner and have been for 24 years. And I'll just explain briefly how I approach the problem. And maybe that will give some insight to your listeners. So what I do is I approach the problem from helping the client really define what exactly trying to accomplish from a lifestyle perspective. And we use something called Monte Carlo simulation or stochastic modeling to give us some confidence as to whether they can achieve something. And when somebody is retired, we take into account all of their Social Security and other sources of income. And then we look to, okay, what do we need to draw from whatever investment assets you have? And we think in terms of investing as more of a total return approach rather than let's generate income. So that's the first step, is to think of, if you're going to live 20, 30 years in retirement, you can't just live off of and invest for income because you have inflation and other risks. You're going to need to have some returns in addition to that. So we think from a total return aspect rather than let's go out and find things that pay a lot of current income. So that's the first step.
Okay.
And then from there, we build a portfolio. And so a typical person in retirement, let's say they need, just as an easy number, $10,000 a year to supplement whatever retirement sources that they have. The first thing we do is we create a two-year cash reserve bucket for that expected cash flow. So if they need $10,000 a year in this very simple example, we're going to have a minimum $20,000 or 2 years of expected cash flows sitting as cash. And then we create a monthly check to the client for that supplemental income. So I'm just building a structure here.
Okay.
And then that gives them 2 years of comfort that whatever goes on in the world, whatever happens in the markets or in, you know, on Fox Business News or CNBC, I don't have to worry where my cash flow is going to come from. And you could argue that that's not necessarily the best use of money, but the emotional benefit that someone that doesn't have a regular job, knowing that they're going to be fine for 2 years at worst case, gives them a lot more comfort. And then the second thing we do is in the portfolio, we add some short-term bond instruments or bond-like instruments that would cover another 2 or 3 years of expected cash flows during retirement. So from an individual perspective, if you structure it this way in your mind and emotionally, you feel like, man, I really got like 4 or 5 years of my expected lifestyle expenses covered.
Right.
And not really quote unquote at risk. And again, you could argue that it's not the best use of money from a purely financial sense, but it's not just a financial problem when you're in retirement. And then beyond that, we invest in a very diversified total return portfolio that is not that undifferent than what a normal portfolio might be right before pre-retirement, because now that money really has about a 5-year time horizon. So it allows you to be a lot less worried about day-to-day fluctuations. And this is something that was put together by a lot of, you know, leading experts in the planning profession. And it's something that I've used and I've found it really helpful because it doesn't just answer that economic question of how do I generate the income? It also helps manage the emotional part of the whole equation.
Right. And then as you start moving, then I guess you can sort of, pour money from your long-term buckets into your other, your midterm buckets and your short-term buckets so that eventually it just sort of cycles through. Is that, the way it works?
Yeah. So what you do is you would structure lots of, I call them little conversations. You always want to have lots of little conversations. So you never actually have to have a big conversation and deal with a big issue. So functionally the way we operate anyway is once a year, we would look at that cash reserve bucket, and obviously it would have been drained down. And then when we go to rebalance their longer term portfolio, if we're selling something to bring it down to its target allocation, rather than buy the thing that underperformed, we would siphon off our some of the excess growth and use that opportunistically to fill that cash reserve bucket. And then in times of really bad markets, when things are really bad, we might actually let that cash reserve bucket deplete a little bit so we don't have to sell things at the wrong time. So, if you think about it, there's so much unknown in people's lives and in the markets and everything else. Really what you're just trying to do is build a lot of buffers so you have flexibility in how you make decisions.
I like this idea of having this flexibility in how you make decisions. And so having those three buckets kind of helps you put together that flexibility because, like you said, if there's a bad market or something's going down, then you can sit here and say, well, I still got another year of my cash bucket and I still have another 2 years in my bond-like instruments bucket. So I'm okay and I can kind of let it ride a little bit and wait for the market recovery.
Yeah, and emotionally, that's invaluable or can be depending on the person to give you that wherewithal to stick with the strategy when everybody feels like the world is going, you know, to hell in a handbasket.
That's right. And I think that's a good point, because look at a lot of the people who in 2008, 2009 panicked and they sold a lot of their stocks when the market was low and destroyed, you know, like half the value of their retirement accounts. And you can't recover from that.
Yeah. And here's a really good example. I was sitting in a client meeting yesterday with a longtime client, and super smart guy, smart couple. And they started the conversation, and this is, you know, January, and we've had some volatile times in the market, although the market really hasn't gone down much. And they were like, Roger, what are we going to do if this debacle continues? When do we sell everything? And that's, you know, it's a scary feeling when you're in your late 60s or in your 70s and your earnings power is no longer what it used to be. And you realize, I don't have time to make it up. So even just little volatile periods of time, I mean, if you're watching Fox News or CNBC, you feel like we're in a calamity or a debacle, to use his term, when really things haven't moved at all. So it's a really different mental mindset when you're retired and not working and earning money.
So what did you tell them about when to sell?
Good question. I said, sell. No, I walked through sort of what we talked about. It's like, well, look, Mr. Jones, we have these cash reserves. We have this bucket. This is how we're allocated. And this is what the expected are. These are all the buffers that we have in place. So we have this flexibility. And I think for this client, it ends up being a little bit of a reoccurring theme, but I think I'm like that emotional counselor to center them, because for them, outside of talking with, say, myself, they just get the messaging of whatever's on the financial media, which is always playing up right now anyway, all the scariness of the world. So it's a good way of getting recentered. And that's part of having those little conversations, so you don't let these little crazy events or media frenzies overtake your mind, because it's just a natural thing that happens.
So then what do you suggest to somebody who's in their later years of retirement? They've been retired for a few years and it starts to look like their capital is kind of going down. Do you have any suggestions for them as they start moving through their principal and they're no longer living on their interest? Or if they run into a situation where the rates aren't favorable and they can't, you know, they have to start drawing on their principal rather than living on their interest. Do you have any suggestions for them?
Well, that's a really good question, because most people that I talk with, even fairly wealthy people, aren't really interested in leaving huge estates. So their plan is that they're, you know, many people have adopted that die broke mindset, which if you're going to die broke, that implies that you start to spend down your assets, right? And they get lower and lower every year. And that's pretty scary. The way that I deal with that is, and this is the only way I know how to deal with it and feel comfortable as you see those values go down, because it would be really simple if we knew exactly when everybody was going to die, because then the math gets a lot easier.
Right.
But we don't. What I use is the Monte Carlo simulations and the stochastic modeling and basically what they do is they take your spending patterns and they look at how much risk in return, what the risk and return profile is of your portfolio. And it simulates 1,000 different possible experiences if you spend like you do, and it doesn't predict the future, but it gives you a good read of what success rate you might have if you continue this current spending plan, even if you factor in really, really bad markets and really, really good markets. That is the best way that I found to help take a temperature as to whether we're overspending or underspending.
Okay. And I was just going to say, how do you find these Monte Carlo simulations? Can you just find them online? Is there a special site you can go through, or is a lot of what you do proprietary and you kind of need to go through a financial planner?
Well, I'll answer that question. But first, I want to say the nice thing about using them, and it also can help you gauge how much risk you actually have to take.
Okay.
So it can do the reverse. And I've had instances where the clients have outlined really what their spending pattern aspirations are. And you look at what they have in capital. It's like, well, really, you need to take almost no investment risk, it looks like, to achieve these things. So it helps you not take too much risk as well as figure out how much you do need to take. But to answer your question, I'm a little bit of a Monte Carlo snob because I've used it for a long period of time. And, you know, it's basically a statistical model.
Right.
And the hard part with statistical models are that the assumptions built into them mean everything. I don't know of any retail models that are available for the retail client. There are two that I use that I'm really comfortable with, and my understanding is they're only available to the advisory community. But they're definitely the best decision tool that I've used in helping gauge all this probabilities of all this uncertainty that retirees face. But I'm not aware of any retail versions of a good Monte Carlo that I've actually done any due diligence on.
Thank you for joining me today. And once again, if you could just tell us real quickly what your site is and what you do.
Yeah, well, I'm a practicing financial advisor, own a registered investment advisory firm, and I have the Retirement Answer Man blog, which is where I talk about all things about how to deal with the issues we talked about today and how to retire, how to dream up and plan and live as close to your ideal retirement as possible. And I do that at RogerWhitney.com, and I have a weekly blog and answer lots of questions from people about things like this because there's a lot of things that it's hard to get clear answers on.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again for joining us. And we will go ahead and move into the panel discussion portion of our podcast. Welcome to the roundtable portion of the Money Tree Investing podcast. This week, discussing retirement, we have Andrea Trevelyan of TakeASmartStep.com, Andrew Sather of eInvestingForBeginners.com, and we have a special guest panelist, Paula Pant from AffordAnything.com, and I am Miranda Marquette from PlantingMoneySeeds.com. Welcome to the panel today, Paula.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So this week we are talking about investing during retirement and spending money during retirement. So often, especially those of us who are younger, so often we think about, oh, well, how do I build up the money to get me to retirement? And we don't usually have a plan for what we're going to do with that money once we're in retirement. So that's the first question I want to ask you, panelists. Have you thought about how you will spend your money during retirement? And let's go ahead and start with you, Paula, since you're our guest.
Well, I like the idea of having a 2-year buffer, as Roger had talked about, giving the peace of mind, giving yourself some peace of mind of knowing that no matter what ups and downs the market has, you've got cash to spend for the next couple of years. I think that's just really – that's important. And in retirement, you're going to spend more, presumably, in the first couple of years because you're going to be traveling, having fun, partying it up, living the life. Spending will probably naturally go down as time progresses.
And what about you, Andrea? Have you thought about how you're going to spend your money in retirement?
Yes, and totally non-financial point. I'm going to travel, eat, drink, and then occasionally do some yoga. but I agree completely with Paula. I do like the have a nice little cash buffer. It's going to be high, then there's going to be a dip, but then it's going to go high again because your last few years are actually some of your most expensive with healthcare and everything.
I think that's a great point that you probably, you know, you spend a lot, you're going to travel, then you're going to come home and your spending is going to go down and then you're going to have to move into a home and then it's going to get expensive again because of healthcare. What about you, Andrew? Have you thought about this?
No, because it's so far away. Why would I? No, just kidding.
But, the youngest.
Save for retirement? What?
Well, I'm sure.
What show am I on?
No. I'm sure he's saving for retirement. He just hasn't thought about how he's going to use the money in retirement.
Yeah. So I think those are all great points. I mean, really, especially the 2 year buffer, definitely agree with that. And as well, you know, the healthcare thing. I mean, you see it. I mean, I've seen it in my own family of some of the elderly members of my family having to go into assisted living. So that is a huge expense, and it's something that's not really avoidable. So you definitely have to plan for it. And that's why we have this show. And it's why you try to make as much money from your investments as you can, because these things will come up and life just happens. And so there's some things you just can't plan for. But if you have enough buffer and if you have some sort of financial security, then you can be assured that you're prepared for these type of situations.
So let's talk about that a little bit. With lifespans getting longer and longer over the last 50 years, our lifespans have increased. And even though we look at the numbers and, you know, the average life expectancy is still, you know, around the 70-year mark, most of us know people who have lived into their 80s and 90s and people who live to be in their hundreds. That's starting to become more common as well. So what are some of the ways you can protect your assets from the risk of longevity? Do you think long-term care insurance and annuities could be part of the plan? Are these sort of investments that you need to make? What do you think, Andrea? Let's start with you.
Well, first, I wanted to say I actually slightly disagree with our guest in that, you know, he's saying you can't any longer live off the income from your assets. I actually think that's how you protect for longevity. It's one of the reasons I love dividends. Real estate is perfect because those actually do adjust with inflation because companies are growing, the dividend grows. If you own a rental property, you can increase rent as it goes. So creating a portfolio that actually has assets in it that grow with inflation but are paying you, I think is a great way to manage longevity risk. And then the other thing that I tell people is, you know, if you really are stressed out about the market and everything, doing like an immediate annuity, I don't necessarily think you need to do like a variable annuity, but like when you hit retirement, taking a chunk and just putting it in an annuity, I think is a really great way. Like if I had clients that were like wanted to pull the money out every time it dropped 200, I would put them or a portion of their assets in an immediate annuity, because I think that is a really great way to make sure that there's something there for the long term.
What do you think, Paula? A lot of people think like annuities are of the devil. So do you think that, do you agree with that? Or what kinds of things would you put in place to protect your assets?
I wouldn't go so far as to call them the devil, but I would say that if it's possible for you to find a sustainable source of income in another way, I'd encourage you to do that first. And my favorite has always been rental properties. That's my retirement strategy even right now in my 30s. Because it's inflation protected, you know, as rents typically rise with inflation. So every year as inflation increases, you can increase your rents to correspond. When the mortgage is paid off, when you own that house free and clear, you can collect even before the mortgage is paid off, you can collect some money. But once it's paid down, you're collecting a pretty substantial portion of money. And once you multiply that over 4, 5, 6 houses, with property management in place, you've got a nice passive source of income that you can just live on.
That's a good point. I think that both of you made about income and getting income producing assets into your portfolio as part of your retirement strategy. And back to you, Andrew, what do you think?
I definitely agree with, you know, what you guys both said. I think annuities and a lot of the insurance products that are out there are not really for your own benefit. If anything, they're for the benefit of the person who's selling it to you so they can make a commission. And so you have to really look long and hard about what kind of things are they trying to sell you and what things actually make sense for you long term. I think the ideal is always to have enough money to where you are insuring yourself. You know, like you talk about these income producing rental properties. That's a great example. Another thing is like the dividends, like Andrea is saying. These things, if you have them in place, even when the market goes bad, you know, you have investments in the right places to where everything's going to recover and you'll be covered both on the income side and on the principal side and the capital side. So I really am skeptical about the different products that these insurance salesmen try to pitch you. And I think a lot of them you can do without.
I do think, though, that Andrea made a good point that speaks to one of the things Roger talked about in the interview as well. This idea that the end is nigh and things are terrible and everything's going crashing down. And I think Andrea made a good point about, well, maybe an immediate annuity is good for somebody who is going to freak out and change their investing plan every time the stock market has a hiccup. You know,
so, I mean, somebody with that kind of a mindset shouldn't be in the market anyways, to be honest.
But the immediate annuity for those type of people gives them peace of mind that right. A portion of their expenses are always going to be covered. And so you can have the assets in there to continue growing and they won't freak out. You know, so if half of their expenses are covered by this annuity and it's not ever going away, it's almost like having a fancy emergency fund.
A fancy emergency fund.
I call it fancy because it never goes away.
But no, I think that's a good point that, you know, really too, it depends on your mindset and what are you going to be thinking of as you're going through retirement? Because part of this, and I think one of the things that we had talked about with having this cash buffer, having some buckets, having a little flexibility, I think that helps you have that peace of mind. So kind of going along with that as well, they talk about the 4% rule a lot. How are you going to outlive your money if you just use this 4% rule, which says if you withdraw 4% of your assets each year, the rest of them should still keep working for you. And between your returns plus inflation, your returns minus inflation, 4% should still be safe enough for you to outlive your money. But as Roger points out, if you plan to die broke, it doesn't really matter. You can start getting into your assets. So let's start with you, Andrew. Do you plan to die broke? And and what are you going to do to make sure that you outlast your money?
Something that's always, you know, been part of my values is I want to leave a legacy, and I want to have some sort of legacy that I can pass on not only to my kids but to my grandkids. So definitely for me, the plan to die broke is maybe the last thing that would happen that would, you know, I'm going to try to prevent that. So some ways, obviously, you know, I'm starting young. That's one big way, socking away as much as you can. And then we've talked about this on the podcast before. I remember Nick used to talk about, you know, creating income producing assets and building these assets and investing in these type of assets. So outside of the stock market and real estate and all the general type of investments, try to get yourself involved in some sort of side gig or some sort of maybe small business that you can be a part of or partly own or even own outright, and try to create income from yourself, from your own hustle. And so that's one way to really grow your capital so that it can last for a long time.
Okay. So what about you, Paula? Do you plan to die broke?
Oh, heck no. Can you imagine how stressful the last 5 years of your life would be if you literally died broke, if you died at zero? You have no idea when that the end point is coming. So you're going to be spending the last few years of your life afraid that you're going to outlive your money. That seems like a terrible way to end things.
That's a very good point. What about you, Andrea?
Yeah, I'm not all for the die broke approach, exactly for what Paula said. You don't know when the end is coming. And I have two grandmas who are still alive. One's 98, one's like 87. And I don't want to be 98 and wondering, can I make it two more years? Be able to make it. With that said, I'm also not going to, I don't have any intention of, you know, bequeathing this giant estate. If it happens, it happens. But I want enough that I'm comfortable, but, you know, that's it.
Right.
Can I add, so some way you can like reduce the effects of running out of money before you die? I think you have to focus on the things you can control and the things you can't control. So one thing you can control is how much are you spending and what's your lifestyle like? If you can start, if you're running the numbers and you're seeing that at the rate I'm going, you know, I'm burning more than I'm putting in. So I'm starting to chip away at my big nest egg. One thing you can do is you can start to cut lifestyle to whatever is reasonable. And then from there you can sort of make up for lost time. So I don't think like the market doesn't know what you're doing, so it's not going to give you credit for trying harder. You know, if you're behind and you're going to try to take more risk and you're going to pile into these investments that you hope make you more money than the average, the market doesn't care that you're putting all this effort. It's just going to do what the market's going to do. So I think if you're trying to catch up and you're running out of money and you're running out of time, the best way to do that is not to try to make it up with a superior investment. The best way is to cut your lifestyle to where you're creating more money for yourself just in that act alone.
So what kind of final assumptions? We talked a little bit about, you know, Andrew mentioned what you can control and what you can't control. And so what sort of assumptions do you think we make about what we can or cannot, well, what we can control? A lot of the time we make all these assumptions about, oh, well, the stock market's going to grow this much, or my investments are going to be this stable, or whatever. I mean, are these assumptions damaging to your investing strategy during retirement? And let's go ahead and throw it back to you real quick, Andrew.
Well, look at the word assume, right? When you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. A lot of times we take these things for granted and we don't understand maybe the big picture. So I'm going to plug Nassim Taleb's The Black Swan book again, because it's really a great read. He talks about a turkey. And if there's this turkey who gets fed every day by his owner, 6 o'clock every day he's getting fed. So it's reasonable for him to think that tomorrow I'm going to get fed, the next day I'm going to get fed. And indeed he does. He gets fed every single day. Yet on the 1001 day of supposing to get fed, instead of getting fed, he gets his head chopped off and he becomes Thanksgiving dinner. So, I mean, if you were to, as the turkey, you think, I've had 1,000 days of being fed. Why won't I have 1,000 more days of being fed? He's not looking at the big picture. All the economists, the buy side analysts, they all agreed that according to their mathematical models, the turkey was supposed to be fed on this 1,001 day. But instead, you know, he didn't get fed. He became dinner. That same concept applies to the markets as well. We have the way the markets work. They rise slowly over time. And then it could go on for hundreds of days, even thousands of days. And then you have one big drop off and then a period of time where things are really rough. So with stock market crashes, you really have to not assume that you know what's going to happen in a crash. You know, we always talk about what's the next market downfall, what's the next bear market going to be, but you can't just look at past history and think that that's what's really going to happen. We could recover like we did in 08, you know, there was a quick recovery in 08, we could recover like there was in 2000, or we could have a lost decade like we did back in the 1930s. It could even go longer, it could go 15 years. So the point is, don't freak out if things don't happen the way you expect them to. Have these things, if that means an immediate annuity, if that means a 2-year buffer, make sure you have these things in place to where you're going to survive past any general assumptions you might have.
Okay. And Andrea, what do you think?
Well, I think the biggest misconception in planning for retirement and managing your investments is that, you know, there's all the scientific information behind it, when in reality, almost everything that we base our investing on is based on assumptions. Even the Monte Carlo, which he said he likes to use, it's all backdated information that's being used to assume the future. So I think the best thing that you can do when you're, you know, kind of going into investing and planning for retirement is realize that almost everything that you're doing is based on some sort of assumption. Even the 4% rule is based on history. So I think you have to take that into consideration and just continually be watching and, you know, every year update, because like Andrew said, the market's not going to be on your time schedule. So just know that everything that you're doing is based on historical assumptions and you're guessing what is going to happen in the future. It's all a big guess. And so because you're not going to be right 100% of the time, you have to go back consistently and retool everything.
Okay. And close us out, Paula. Give us, you get to have the last word. Tell us what you think is the most damaging sort of assumption you can make.
Honestly, I think the most damaging assumption is that people are going to be inflexible. As the last recession showed, when when poop hits the fan and things don't go as people expect, ingenuity and resourcefulness come out. And so you don't be wedded to this idea of I'm going to withdraw 4% a year and I'm going to do exactly this and I'm going to do exactly that. No, you are going to adapt. And if things don't go exactly as you expect, you'll figure something out. So just relax. You know, you'll get a part-time job, or you'll go into rental properties even though you previously had no plans to do so. You'll do some consulting on the side or some freelancing on the side. Your kids will move back into your house, and so people will consolidate their housing, and you know, you'll figure it out. So I wouldn't panic too much. I wouldn't worry too much. I wouldn't get too hung up on the notion that your retirement plan is going to have to be any one way.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today, Paula, and sitting in for Joe.
Oh, yeah. Joe has asked me to give a shout out to Stacking Benjamins.
Of course. So.
Shout out to Stacking Benjamins, of course. And let's not forget, Paula's site is affordanything.com. You can also visit any of our sites, plantingmoneyseeds.com, takeasmartstep.com, or eInvestingForBeginners.com to find out more about investing. And of course, you can get all of the latest episodes on MoneyTreePodcast.com, as well as subscribing in iTunes. And until next week, remember to invest for your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at MoneyTreePodcast.com for more free investing resources.